Welcome to the final Take the Points College Football Podcast of the 2019-2020 season. I'm Tom. I'm here in Connecticut. I'm live via Skype with Dan and Ryan from Phoenix, Arizona. Fellas, we've reached the end of the road like boys to men. It's about a week removed from the national championship game with LSU's impressive win over Clemson. Given that you've had a week to reflect on this, what are your thoughts? Dan, we'll start with you.
Congratulations, LSU. You're one of the best teams of our lifetime. Amazing offense, supremely talented. I guess we all should have taken notice after they beat Alabama. They knew in the locker room after that game that they were going to run the table. They smashed everybody. Clemson just couldn't get anything going on offense. Lawrence actually looked not so hot, which is an interesting thing leading into next year. But great job, Coach O. Great job, Joe Brady. Finally, for the first time in our lifetime, LSU figured out a way to utilize all their amazing talent on offense. We don't have to watch Leonard Fournette and Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry and Dwayne Bowe and X, Y, and Z and Kevin Falk, and it doesn't matter. Like, there's a billion players who just got hosed due to archaic offense. So nice job, LSU. Sucks for you, Clemson, but another nice 14-1 year. Best recruiting class in the country coming in. Got a nice little late Christmas gift of Travis Etienne returning next year. So excited for next year. Congratulations, LSU. Congratulations, Coach O. Joe Burrow, oh boy, you've been the king of New Orleans the past week, and I've done enough talking for one segment on this, so I'll let you guys talk about Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I mean, that's the obvious thing to talk about, but we'll throw it to Ryan for that one.
I mean, Burrow was ridiculous. He was locked in. He started a little bit slow, getting bad field position, never seemed flustered, never seemed phased, and, you know, he just knows when to go for the kill shot, and that's just something that it's partially some of the offense, the play calls, whatever, but like some of it's just innate. Like, you just have that ability to just not give a shit and go for that kill shot. And he went for it. Every time he got an inch, he took it. Even a few times he didn't really even have an inch, and he stuck some balls in there that were pretty incredible. So, and they did this without much of a run game. They really didn't run the ball much in either of the playoff games, and they still just dominated and moved the ball at will. So good for them. King of New Orleans, Joe Burrow. I'm really super tempted to go up to Vegas for the draft just to see what kind of nonsense Burrow gets up to. Like, we think Baker Mayfield partied. Wait till we see what Burrow does, because he knows he's the number one pick.
Yeah.
Like, some of these guys had to think about it. They weren't sure they were the number one pick. Like, this is a total lock, and he's going there with, like, no nerves, no stress. Like, he's going to do some shit on the strip. I would love to go up there and see what happens before he gets the stink of Cincinnati all over him.
So he is going to be wearing a crown at some point. That's one prediction. Also, I saw a thing. I don't know how accurate this is, but I saw that they have to ride a boat, the first round picks, to the stage. Is this correct?
Oh, yeah. They're putting the stage up on the Bellagio fountain, and they're going to be closing down the strip to car traffic, and they're going to be boating players up to the stage.
So Joe Burrow is going to climb like a sail of a boat, like Eddie Vedder circa 92, and he's going to fall off into the fountain.
He's going to be so drunk, they're going to have to tape him to the boat like, what about Bob? And just send him up to Goodell with an auto 2-game suspension to start his career.
So we talk a lot, and it started as a joke on this podcast, but it evolved into something I truly now believe. We used to talk about guys being a winner, and it was like this innate, unmeasurable quality for quarterbacks, especially like, oh, that guy's a winner. Yeah, he doesn't have the biggest arm. He doesn't have the best 40 speed, but he just wins. And it's kind of like a personality that you see on and off the field. And I think Joe Burrow might be the number one winner that I've ever seen in our life who embodies this quality. Like, there are other guys, like, say, Trevor Lawrence, who might physically be a better specimen. Not that Joe Burrow is a bad one, but his attitude and his personality, he's got the winner quality written all over him. And we've seen this in the week since the championship game, where he is smoking cigars and, you know, having that hat, which I won't say what it says, but everything he's done has just proven him a winner. Ryan?
Well, I want to jump in. Hang on. Before we fucking pour liquid gold over this guy and put him into the Hall of Fame, let's remember, it was 1 year.
Uh-huh.
He had the most ridiculous talent around him.
Yes.
He is 4 to 5 years older than most of the competition he's playing against. He's older than the NFL MVP already. So before we say this guy's the greatest of all time, let's just remember he is significantly older than all his competition. He's had way more time to learn the offense, to learn these things. He's basically a pro. So, you know, let's see what he does next year and the next year after that. You know, he's swagged out. I'll give him that. He might be one of the most swagged out guys we've had. But let's not call him a winner yet, because last year he was mediocre and that team was mediocre. And I don't think he all of a sudden became a winner this year. He had a really good team and he got super swagged out. That's all.
I mean, I think we're kind of saying the same thing. To me, the winner, you know, this is why it started as a joke or a backhanded compliment. It was like for guys who would win games or be the quarterback of a good team, but didn't necessarily like have traditionally good quarterbacking skills. Like, I would still probably draft, if I had the choice, I'd take Trevor Lawrence in a draft over Burrow for sure. You know, if you're trying to draft like a future superstar. And I even think, you know, somebody's going to make the argument for Tua over him probably. I think it'll be interesting to see.
But when you say those, the guys, the not measurable winners, I'm talking the Tebows, the Kellen Moores, the guys that did
AJ McCarron
for 4 years. They won games. Like, this guy did it for 1 year. So, like, let's just, you know, when you talk about that, let's not put him on the pedestal with guys like Kellen Moore and Tim Tebow just yet.
Okay. You know what? I would like to step in real quick here before we move on. That was an excellent point raised by Ryan on the potential question marks with Joe Burrow. Jumping a little bit too quickly, you know, especially with being a super talented team surrounded at LSU. I think that just proves that if Cam Newton was the quarterback at LSU, they would have scored 150 points a game, every single game. But I'm just saying, like, I also agree with Ryan that it might be a little too early to sign off on Burrow as the GOAT. But he did execute the offense to perfection, I will say that.
But that being said, hang on real quick. That being said, he still is not going to be the worst quarterback in his division as an NFL rookie. That would be Baker Mayfield. Oh. He's going to be the worst quarterback in his own division. With Big Ben, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, all of those guys are better than Baker. So
Mayfield's hilarious.
Hilarious.
Yes. Correct.
Bold prediction for 2020 NFL. No commercials with Baker Mayfield on TV all the time at every commercial.
All right. So I want to, before we go further, I want to kind of give a table of contents for the show, because the season's over. This is our last show of the year. And, well, you know, our last show of the season. The calendar year will have many more shows. But so we just did our little reflection. What we're about to do in a second is what we call the Take the Points Awards, one of our favorite things to do. And that's going to touch on a lot of the stuff we just talked about. Then Dan and I have thoughts on the Aaron Hernandez documentary. Yes. Sorry. I don't know why I can't pronounce that word. Yes. The murder-mentary. And then we're going to end it with inductions. We're going to end with inductions to the Take the Points Hall of Fame, which we started last year with 15 inductees. I was soft. I said, oh, we'll each induct about 2 people this year. And Dan and Ryan shut that down immediately. We will induct another 15 between us.
That is correct. And bold prediction for 2021's wrap-up podcast. 15 more are going in next year as well.
Yeah. So we have a lot to get to, and so we're going to go right into the Take the Points 2019-2020 Awards. Here's how we're going to do it. I'm going to lead this part of the show. I'm going to name the award, and then we're all going to sort of discuss it, and then we will all agree on one recipient of the awards. Now, the first few are pretty easy. Some years it's a little tougher, but let's just go through these quickly. Player of the year.
Fellas,
I think we're all in agreement. Joe Burrow.
Jonathan Taylor, Wisconsin. You know, you really got to look out for it. No, of course it's Joe Burrow. Let's go.
All right. Coach of the year. Are we in agreement that Coach O gets this one?
Yes. Coach O definitely also gets this one as well.
Okay. And slightly. Game of the year. Are we going to give this to LSU Alabama? You don't have to, but to me, that was the biggest buildup, as we said, for a game in probably 7 or 8 years, and it delivered.
I did like the Hawaii Bowl this year. That Hawaii game was good. Game of the year, Tom. Do you have any thoughts so I can think about this for 10 seconds?
Yeah. Again, I'll just reiterate, my choice would be LSU Alabama. First off, I'm biased because Dan actually came out to the East Coast for this one. So even if that game was a blowout, it would have been exciting just to see you out here and have a nice Wegman sub.
Yes.
But it was also 46-41, a game that basically was the one major challenge to LSU's immaculate run. It kind of turned the tide, pardon the pun, for Alabama being out of the playoff. So that's my choice.
There's a couple other honorable mentions. The Oklahoma comeback in the regular season against our Baylor Bears was one.
Yeah, they did it. They did it 2 weeks in a row. Iowa State, correct, and then Baylor.
Also true. The Ohio State Clemson semifinal was a fantastic game as well. But ultimately, Tom, I think I'm in agreement with you. LSU Alabama was the game of the year.
Yeah.
I thought it was the most exciting and the most meaningful. All right. Most exciting offense. That's an easy one. The LSU Tigers. Most exciting defense. Thoughts, gentlemen?
Okay. Are we going up to our Tinder team? Because it was the under every week with Utah?
That's correct.
That was my thought.
I mean, there wasn't like a nasty defense. Like, even Florida was good, but they didn't have like these like freak players with like, you know, 7 defensive touchdowns or anything. Yeah, I think Utah. Are we okay with that?
I think it's Utah too, because the Utah under was the best bet of the year, the most consistent winner of the year. So I think that has to be the one.
Yeah, I mean, I purposely made the category most exciting as opposed to quote-unquote best. I think Utah can make the argument for best, but they were the one we loved watching, and they got those unders. All right, Ryan, this one's for you. Best coordinator or, quote, coach to watch?
Ooh, best coordinator. I mean, well, Joe Brady, I think, is the runaway winner for best coordinator, even though he technically wasn't even the offensive coordinator. So I don't know if that disqualifies him or not.
I think he can count. I mean, you can also, you know, expand this to multiple guys if there's other guys you think are coaches who really showed us a lot of improvement or potential this season.
I mean, Brady was ridiculous. The passing game, I mean, that was the difference in the championship and the whole season, was them being able to throw the ball like they did. So I think that has to go there. But I'm going to give a quick honorable mention, because Dan mentioned it. Despite their lack of crazy top first round talent, Florida's defense, my God, like to go through the Felipe Franks stuff and the ankle and Trash or whatever his name is coming in.
Trash.
You know, like that Florida defense was really nasty, and they did it without a lot of first round guys and a lot of young guys. So honorable mention to that. But yeah, Joe Brady.
All right. I'm on board with that. Okay. Two that we can do at the same time. Most entertaining moment on the field and most entertaining moment off the field.
Okay. Most entertaining moment on field was the Ole Miss guy peeing on the field, which ensued a 15-yard penalty, which ensued a missed extra point, which in turn made a loss, which made Matt Luke get fired. They hired Lane. The Mississippi State was like, ah, shit, they got Lane. Moorhead was kind of falling apart. They fired him. They brought in Leach. This is all because the guy peed on the field. That's the play of the year on the field.
That is 100% perfect.
I agree, and I'm actually going to count that as both, because everything that happened after with Lane becoming the coach, I think becomes the most entertaining moment off the field.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, Lane's kid chanting SEC in a private jet while Colin Cowherd is like retweeting it being like, free private jets are the best private jets. Like a bunch of assholes. That was great.
All right, so that is our that chain of events is our most entertaining moment of the year on and off the field. All right.
Egg Bowl 2020 live podcast.
The we talked about this before, but the upgrade from Egg Bowl 2019 to 2020 is maybe the biggest upgrade of any game.
Can't wait for Thanksgiving. Ryan might eat meat. This is a big event. This is a big event.
You listen, there's
never going down. It's 57-54. I mean, no food left in the house. I'd be like, all I got left's a drumstick. You're like, ah, I can do it. All right, anyway, sorry.
Ryan might eat meat is the funniest.
If that's not the title of this podcast episode, I don't know what
it is. That's going to lead to some weird SEO results, but that's fine. All right, next award, most improved, and this can go to a player, a team, or a unit, whatever you guys want. Most improved. I mean, we were talking about Joe Burrow earlier, or do we want to take it somewhere else?
We've given too many.
It's not LSU because they're perennially ranked that high. It's a team that's not always that high. Ryan has some input.
I got it. Here's your most improved. The North Carolina Tar Heels going from a dog shit team with a bunch of first rounders to an actual bowl team with a real coach and a freshman quarterback. They are looking nothing but up. That's to me my most improved college football franchise will be the North Carolina Tar Heels. Looking forward to it.
All right. I have an honorable mention, which would be the Oregon Ducks coming, recovering from the ghost of Willie Taggart to a Rose Bowl winning team. All right. Transfer Portal Award. This is an award for a new guy who came in this year through the transfer portal and made an enormous impact on one team.
We're not going to count Burrow.
No, this year only. So he had to transfer in this year.
Justin Fields then, right?
Justin Fields.
I think your choices would be Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts. Those are probably the two obvious choices.
It's going to be Fields. One interception looked pretty damn good. I think if he doesn't tweak his knee, they'd probably beat Clemson, unfortunately. Maybe not. Anyway, I think Fields slightly over Hurts just because of how Oklahoma got manhandled badly and they had the regular season loss that Fields didn't have.
And technically, Hurts wasn't really an upgrade considering they had two consecutive Heisman trophies and he did not win one. So it kind of has to be Fields.
He's a downgrade.
Okay. Yeah, Fields is my choice as well. So, all right. Speaking of quarterbacks, fellas, it's time. The Zach Mills Award. Ryan, would you like to explain to the listeners what the Zach Mills Award is?
The Zach Mills Award is a very prestigious, the most prestigious award that we offer Take the Points.
We've been doing it for all 9 years.
All the years. The Zach Mills Award is named after former Penn State quarterback Zach Mills, who I had the pleasure of watching in his first career start with Tom at Marist College. We saw Zach Mills come in off the bench and win as a freshman and take Penn State by storm and then slowly get worse every year until he finally got benched as a senior. So in honor of the quarterback or player, but typically it's the quarterback who progresses the worst from a great freshman campaign to a lousy junior or senior campaign, goes the Zach Mills Award.
And it's a really easy choice this year. So I'm going to let you Arizona boys do this one.
I will proudly take this one. This is the easiest Zach Mills Award winner since Zach Mills himself.
It's going to be renamed next year.
What the hell? We actually have some... That, okay. It's Khalil Tate. And I have his stats up on ESPN, and they fired up some Khalil Tate highlight video, which is funny because it should be from 2017. Khalil Tate burst onto the scene in 2017 with some unbelievable rushing performances. With only 153 carries in 2017, he ran for 1,411 yards and 12 touchdowns. He ran for 10 yards a carry. He was the most exciting player maybe in college football the second half of the year. Us people on the West Coast got to watch him. We're like, oh my God, he's a sophomore. The sky's the limit for this guy. Rich Rod gets fired. We're thinking he's going to transfer to somewhere else and be a superstar. He elects to stay. Arizona hires Kevin Sumlin, offensive mastermind, great head coach, sweet person, whatever. It doesn't work out. 2018, he drops from 1,400 yards rushing down to just 224. It's not like he got hurt. He played the whole year. They just had him throw. He threw 26 touchdown passes, but that wasn't his game. And then this year was just a total joke. He split time with this random, like, fifth-year dude, Grant Gunnell. They had some freshmen in there also playing. Even on senior day, he didn't get the start at quarterback. If you would have told me he wasn't going to get the start at senior day 2 years ago, I would have said, you're a crazy person, or what horrific injury did he have?
He went pro after his junior year.
It's the craziest shit ever. I feel bad for the kid. I hope maybe he catches lightning in the bottle in the combine or goes to the CFL and crushes it and he makes a living off of this. But he was really exciting for 2 years, and I don't know what the hell happened down there. Kevin Sumlin, shame on you. Khalil Tate, Zach Mills, award winner 2020. Slam dunk.
And rest in peace to my 2018 Heisman bet preseason on Khalil Tate. 12-1 odds, the second best odds, right behind Tua.
He should have ran for 2,000 yards and thrown for 3,500. The Pac-12's defenses were a bit suspect in 2018. Like, look back at who they played. It's just, like, mind-boggling how they didn't take advantage. And honestly, kind of how, in a way, all of us look at George Bush Jr. a little bit different after Trump. Rich Rod, I'm looking at a little bit different when Sumlin's around, because Rich Rod apparently is a semi-capable coach, and like, or not, I don't know. But anyway, Khalil Tate, I'm sorry. Let's move on. What's Rich Rod doing? He's calling plays for like Ole Miss, wasn't he? He's gone now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lane. Okay. Good.
Yeah, I think he's on the market currently, but he might have gotten hired. I don't know.
Who's in the Mac? We gotta have like a Mac watch.
Yeah, we haven't done our Mac. What was it, Mac 2024 in a while?
Terry Bowden.
Yeah. Well, listen, folks, this might be a category coming up in just a minute, so you just hang on a second. Oh. But first, we have the Bob Stoops Award for the biggest letdown performance, player, coach, or team.
Texas Longhorns team. They were 6-6 at one point to end the year in that brutal Big 12 schedule with all those elite quarterbacks. It was a bad year in the Big 12. I know Texas had the injury bug, but there ain't an injury bug that big to explain some of those losses. I think they had a squeak one out against Kansas. It's not good. Bad year for Texas. I'm trying to think who was worse. Miami was pretty fucking terrible. Texas was brutal. They're ranked in the top 10 when they played LSU. They actually played LSU the best of, like, anybody, which is crazy.
I think that's a pretty good answer. Next one is the Take the Points We Knew It Award. This is an award for something that we knew was going to happen, even though apparently no one else in the public did. Dan.
In our season recap last year, I will pat myself on the back for my bold prediction. I said there would be no Alabama-Clemson rematch this year. And you said no rematch in the final or the semifinal. And I said no, neither. And you said, wow, bold prediction. But that happened, so I feel good about that.
And we thought at the time that meant Clemson wouldn't make the playoff, that they would lose too much on defense. I would also like to point out that we all were on Clemson to make the national championship game. Basically, we predicted LSU versus Clemson like week 8 or something like that, right after that Alabama game. Everybody else kind of thought that Clemson was bad because they had one or two rough games in September. And we pretty much in early October, after a couple good weeks, we were like, yeah, Clemson's still really good and they're going to make the championship game.
They won every game by 30 for 2 months straight. People forget.
Yeah, and everyone stopped paying attention, though.
Okay.
All right. The other side of that same coin, they take the points. Worst prediction of the year. Do we have a prediction we are all very ashamed of?
Yeah, I picked the Texas Longhorns to make the Final Four. That was a disastrous prediction. That's a bad job. Awful. Horrible on my part. At least none of us said Nebraska was going to be good. We were all right on that.
Thank God. That's a We Knew It award for sure.
Yeah, I mean, mine were wrong, but I wasn't that wrong. Like, I had Utah in the playoff, and I said no Big 12 team would make the playoff. So I was wrong, but it was close.
I think not a horrible prediction, but I said Georgia would win the national championship, and they certainly regressed even from the last 2 years. So definitely wrong on that one. All right.
True.
Well, I have best mascot, but I think we're going to save that for later when we do some inductions into the Hall of Fame.
Okay, so, I got one for the De'Aaron King to win the Heisman Trophy. That's the worst prediction we made. They redshirted him 4 games into the season.
Oh, yeah. Now he's on Miami. So that's a pretty bad prediction. Unless he wins it next year, then we could say we were pretty close. All right.
Yeah, slightly off there. Sorry about that.
Mac 2024. The joke here is we would make fun of coaches that were coaches at big time Power 5 schools who we said would be in the MAC by 20. I think we used to say 2021 a few years ago. Now we've amended it to 2024. Which big time prominent coach who's preferably one who did not get fired in the last few weeks, who still got a job, is going to be in the MAC in about 3 years?
Brian Kelly.
That's all that's necessary.
Do you want to predict the team?
Do it.
Northern Illinois.
Oh, the class of the MAC.
So the way Northern Illinois has been going in recent years, if Brian Kelly becomes the coach there, he probably will be following another coach who left for a more prominent job. So is it possible we could have a swap? Northern Illinois coach in 2023, you know, the hot young hotshot Dave Smith or whatever gets the job at Notre Dame after Brian Kelly's fired. And then Northern Illinois says, Brian Kelly's on the market. Let's pick him up.
The old Taggart.
It could happen. It could happen.
The old Taggart.
The old Taggart. He got Taggarted.
Oh my God. There should be a special category for that, for the like Willie Taggart What the Fuck Award.
Oh.
But he would win that this year.
Oh.
All right.
Next category.
Here's another good one. I don't have a clear favorite for this one. I want to get your guys' instant take. The best non-athlete, non-coach, college football related person of the year. So this could be an announcer, you know, it could be a College Game Day person. It could be Larry, the Dr. Pepper guy.
Big fan. The big fan is the personality of the year.
Dr. Pepper and Dr. Pepper have brought us a TV show, a sitcom somehow during the college football season, so much that it's now turned Tom's son, his own blood, into a Pitt Panther fan because of this commercial. I sent Tom a photo of a blue Pitt hat to our group text last night because his son's a Pittsburgh Panthers football fan. Facts.
If it's on a podcast, it's got to be true. All right. Moving on.
So bad.
The Cardale Jones I Ain't Come to Play School Award for the guy who did not give a fuck this year.
Were these really awards in the previous year? Or are you just making these up at this point?
This is a new award.
I stopped paying attention. Cardale Jones, one more time.
The Cardale Jones I Ain't Come to Play School Award for a player specifically who did not give a fuck this season.
Let's see.
That's a tough one.
That's tough. We had Joey Bosa last year, was runaway winner.
Yeah, there's usually a good one. I don't know if there is a clear winner this year. I mean, De'Eriq King might get the award for, you know, piecing out of Houston quickly.
Dana Holgorsen for convincing his team to tank for the first time in college football history. Like, teams tank for draft picks. He's like, let's just scrap the season. We lost to Oklahoma. Let's just, you guys just all sit out. I'll recruit. We'll, like, work out for a year and lift together. And then we'll try this next year with a really easy schedule. And they said, okay, sounds good. So, yeah, Dana Holgorsen, Houston, tanking 2019, I think, is a good nominee for that one.
So, these next two blended together. When I was writing them, they seemed more distinct. But this one's probably going to go to De'Eriq King as well. The Christian Hackenberg Award for a guy who could not wait to leave his college.
Oh, hold on. There's some good players on bad teams.
The backup at USC, he bounced out of there so fast. As soon as he saw, like, the backup at Slovis came in, he's like, oh, this guy's better than me? See ya. I'm done. I can't even remember this clown's name. He was gone so fast.
Wasn't his name, like, Matt Fink or something?
Yeah, Fink. He peaced out when he saw Slovis throw for like 400 in his
Fink was the third stringer. Wasn't it JT something? JT? Daniels?
Yeah.
One of the guys got hurt. I'm not
Daniels
sure.
Daniels got hurt, and then Fink peaced out when he saw how good Slovis was.
All right, things are great at USC. All right. Ryan, this one's for you. The Tim Tebow Humanitarian Award for a guy we really like who may or may not actually be a humanitarian.
So this is like the college football player of the year who will not make it to the NFL.
No, it's just a guy we really like and think is cool.
Well, that's easy. That would be Zach Moss.
I was going to say that. Very nice.
Zach Moss went from sunny Miami with his wide receiver and quarterback, and they all went to Salt Lake City. And that dude is just the toughest mofo in the room at all times.
He's going to be good in the NFL. Someone's going to steal him late. He's going to be so good.
He just seems like such a great dude. And it's just such like they rally around him. And like, if you look at like when he plays well, Utah has never lost, like, ever. So that's my award for like the guy I think is just the coolest dude who his teammates love the most.
All right. And so we're going to end this with the Tarmac Award, which Ryan is going to take. However, I just want to give Dan a chance. If you have any other awards or any other things you want to say about memorable moments this year.
No, the only thing I do want to point out, I think this last little couple weeks of our college bowl season, everybody played just about. Like, no one really sat out this year. Did that happen? Like, it's pretty normal.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I think there are probably a couple guys, but
we took it for granted. It was like a non-story. Like, no one talked about how everybody played. Like, I was so expecting Jake Fromm to be out there with the hoodie on, like, fuck this. But apparently everyone showed up, at least for a player or two. I know, whatever. But
Jake Fromm's a candidate for the Hackenberg Award, though. He did play, and then he peaced out immediately.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. But that was kind of a cool little thing that I think everyone overlooked.
All right.
Which means next year no one's playing. So great. Here we go.
So I don't know what's coming here, but this whole season – I would say for me personally, the highlight of the Take the Points 2019-2020 season is the 5 to 10 minutes a week where I mention a bad coach, Ryan Spillett plays the little airplane sound, and then me and Dan just get to sit back and relax while Ryan goes off about the Tarmac Report, a.k.a. the report named after Lane Kiffin of the 5 worst coaches week to week. Which, you know, the top of that list didn't change much, but there was a lot of variation, numbers 3 through 5. So I've made a special Tarmac Award. You can do whatever you want with this, Ryan. You can award one guy the Tarmac Award for the season, or if you want to do some kind of wrap-up Tarmac report, you don't have to do it as an actual award. You can do whatever you want here. The final Tarmac of the 2019-2020 season.
Well, Tom, thank you so much. That's a very lovely intro.
By far the best part of this year. By far.
Yes, without a doubt.
Thank you, guys.
We needed you.
Appreciate that.
Me and Tom were low on energy this year.
Oh, I've got 2 kids. I mailed in the whole year, but you carried us. Like Jesus in the sand, when there was one foot set of footprints, that was Tom was sleep-deprived and Ryan was doing the Tarmac.
That's true. I've been working like 80 hours a week. I had one manager quit. One went crazy. It wasn't good. So thank you, Ryan, for carrying us with the Tarmac Report this year.
You are the MVP of TTP.
Oh, thanks, guys. Appreciate that.
And feel free to, like, you know, fall down a flight of stairs and break an ankle or something next year because we got you. Whatever you
yeah.
need.
I mean, we'll don't do that, but metaphorically.
If you got something going on Wednesdays, you can call in for 5 minutes. It was worth it.
I'm going the opposite direction. I'm just not even going to – I'm going to turn on the mics and be like, hey, take the points. Here's Ryan. And then I'm just going to walk away and listen to it later on. Anyway, Tarmac. Do it.
Okay. I've been thinking about this, and pretty much everyone that appeared on the Tarmac Report for more than like 2 or 3 weeks, pretty much all of them got canned. They all eventually got fired.
Well, in addition to being hilarious, the Tarmac is always right.
It is, except there was one guy who just managed to just escape the Tarmac all year. And for that reason, we are renaming the Tarmac Award to the Clay D.B. Cooper Helton Award because he hijacked the goddamn plane and they couldn't fire him. So... So congratulations to Clay Helton. You are the D.B. Cooper of the college football year. You managed to hijack the plane and they couldn't fire you. I got my eye on you for next year. You're already number one on the list. Greg Schiano's got his eye on you, though, so you better watch your ass. He might have his players call a fake punt on a third down punt attempt next year to throw the defense off. So, yeah, so I'm going to give the Tarmac Award to Clay Helton for avoiding the tarmac. However, it is now the D.B. Cooper Award for the coach who manages to escape the wrath for the year, and he gets it.
That's so good. So can we get an early tarmac going into 2021? Clay Helton, obviously. Shiano, obviously. Jeremy Pruitt still has a job, as far as I know.
Yeah, he's on the list for sure. That's three. We're going to give the aforementioned Mac 2024, Brian Kelly. We're going to put him on the warning list. And then in honor of Dan, who really pushed this on me all year and forced me to take a deeper look, I'm going to put Mr. D'Antonio,
yes,
as number five on the preseason tarmac list. There's a lot of shady, weird, creepy shit at Michigan State. I don't want to get into that. That's not this kind of podcast. But nobody at Michigan State is safe at this point. And for that reason, he makes the tarmac as well.
I would like to suggest two honorable mentions. I mean, we've got Shiano on there who hasn't coached a game. Thanks to the South Florida coach swap, there's two guys who belong on this list immediately, despite not having coached at their current schools. I'm talking about Willie Taggart. I'm also talking about Chaz Strong. We're watching you guys. We haven't forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You're both frauds.
The North remembers. All right. You say it's not that kind of podcast, but now we're going to take a brief intermission to talk about our favorite Netflix obsession. What's the name of it? The Mind of a Killer?
Dude, this is where you guys can carry it. I refuse to watch. I'm out.
Yeah, well, you should. You get to watch Robert Kraft squirm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you would love it because it reflects very poorly on the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, Mind of a Killer, the Aaron Hernandez story. I'm pretty sure that's not the title, but let's just go with that.
Great title.
What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, well,
wow. He's not around anymore to kill you.
I don't care. I have a lot of thoughts on this. First of all, he should have went to UConn. None of this would have happened. Like, they said in this documentary that when he was at Florida, everything was fine. But when he went home to Connecticut's when things went bad. They go, Urban Meyer, Tim Tebow, you know, Christian, led by God, John 3:16. And they painted Florida as this, like, chapel of a place. And I'm like, no. His teammates were up to all kinds of no good, way harder than any of his boys in Connecticut.
First off, the fact they just like blended Tebow and Urban Meyer, they're like, yeah, you know, two good Christians, Tim Tebow and Urban Meyer, same dude, basically.
That's what they said. Okay. Let me explain some things to you here. People from Connecticut are not that hard and tough.
What'd you say, motherfucker?
That's right, Tom Z.
By the way, I can
the top 10% of hardest motherfuckers in Connecticut.
That's what I was gonna say. Like, you're joking a little bit, but I definitely feel semi hard here. That did not come out the way I wanted.
No one's ever breaking in your shit. I'll tell you that right now. They'll be like, nah, he's got that Ukrainian name. He's fucking connected. So anyway, going to Florida did not help. And they try to say, like, going to Florida was, like, his saving grace. So
no, someone from the Florida team shot into a car. Allegedly. Yes. We don't know who it was.
Yeah, so that's the first thing. He got involved in way harder stuff when he was in Florida. I don't think they talked about that, too. But I really did really just enjoy the Patriots part where they were like, we didn't know this was coming. How is this possible? They're like, well, you did draft him in the fourth round and he had a first round, like, you know, physical, you know, kind of like round grade on him. The Patriots stuff was pretty ridiculous. I didn't realize any of the other stuff, sexuality stuff. I didn't realize it was that something from like high school. But, I mean, I don't think that has anything to do with anything one way or the other.
No.
And the whole like CTE thing at the end, too, I don't really believe that. I think he was a little too young for that. I just think he got mixed up with the wrong people and life spirals out of control fast. But, yeah, wild shit. Crazy timeline, like stuff I didn't realize, like how he hung himself the day the Patriots went to the White House and like saw Trump. Like, what a weird, like, karmic, I hate the Patriots, you know?
It's yeah, just like, and I didn't know about the, is it abatement they talked about where
yeah,
if you die, abatement. Then they clear your name. And then yeah. I guess is, you know, family would be entitled to some money or they'd be exempt from lawsuits
contract.
Or whatever. So that was interesting to hear. Because yeah. It was interesting to hear how he went to jail from his mansion and all the guards were like, yeah, he basically like didn't care. He was fine living in the cell. So
yeah. He kinda liked that. Yeah.
So I would have my one serious point and my one funny thing takeaway. I mean, there's a lot of funny takeaways, but his dog being named Yukon, I thought was something I didn't know, which was absolutely hilarious. I mean, I know they're from Connecticut and I know his brother played at UConn, but like, I didn't know that Aaron wanted to play at UConn or that they were such a UConn family. I figured his brother just like, you know, that's where he was at talent wise.
UConn offense could have been way better with Hernandez. That's the real takeaway here is that UConn football program missed out on.
Well, when he went to college during the Fiesta Bowl years, right?
Yeah.
So UConn could have won that Fiesta Bowl. Earlier. UConn could have won a national title.
UConn could have been a dynasty. I mean, Nick Saban may have left and became a coordinator at UConn. I mean, you got to really think these are possibilities.
Yeah, I think we'd be looking at a college football Mount Rushmore of Bear Bryant, Nick Saban, Woody Hayes, and Randy Edsall.
I think the NCAA would be trying to like looking at realignment because UConn's dominance would just be killing TV ratings at this point.
Yes. All right. I'm losing my train of thought on this. I have a serious point though. I want to make like, and you touch on it. Like, you know, they talk about sexuality. They talk about CTE. They talk about all that stuff. I don't doubt any of that was like a contributing factor, but you speak of the things they glossed over. Number one, Florida, you already mentioned that, but yeah, that's where the trouble really all began. And they just were kind of like, oh, it was a nice escape from the dangers of Bristol, Connecticut, which by the way, Bristol, like not that bad.
No, not at all. Last point on this, I blame Urban Meyer. I blame Bob Kraft and the quote in the movie where Bob Kraft said, I play football. My grandsons play football. And if you want your children to grow up and be fine, young, upstanding citizens, then they should play football too. I'm watching that shit by myself, sick as a dog, home with the flu, like 1 a.m, no one around. And out loud, I say, ah, fuck you, to the TV.
I did too.
And I catch myself and I'm like, woo, I really dislike this man that much that I verbally said that out loud to nobody.
Yeah,
you know,
I think I did a like, oh, fuck off when he did that
like
line
really
or some other
piece of shit. So another funny thing, you know, I'm just gonna put this out there. When I was visiting, I'm going to hell for this one. When I was visiting you guys in the Northeast, I'm not talking about this. Nope, moving right on.
All right, I'll talk the serious thing. So I work at I do web stuff. You know, I don't contribute to saving the world at all. But people I work with work on serious issues. You know, early childhood stuff, and you know, they know what they're talking about. The other thing they gloss over in this is they're like, oh, his dad was a family man. His dad was like beloved in town. He was a great running back. He used to beat his mom. Also he was really admired. They barely talk about it. That's it, folks. Like it's a good documentary.
Don't worry about that.
It's a good documentary. It's 3 hours. You can be entertained, but like, if you're looking for the cause of why he did all this stuff, you can stop 9 minutes in because he grew up in a household where his dad was abusive and then he grew up and became abusive. And yeah, maybe other people would experience that and not go to the extremes he did, but like, that's where it starts and ends, is his dad. And I don't know the guy. He lives a few towns away, or I don't know. I don't know if I'm saying something that will get me in trouble in my general region, but like, that's where it starts and ends, folks. Urban Meyer is just a spark that lit the fire, but the kindling was already there.
One last point, and I blame the NFL for this. I blame the NFL for being stupid all the time. In Hernandez's trial, the first one against Odin Lloyd, his main thing was that he was there, but he didn't pull the trigger. It was the other two guys, and he was really scared of those two other guys, and then that, you know, they were really bad guys. Then they show a video the day after the murder of those guys like playing with his kid, like throwing up there like, hey, little buddy.
Yeah, giving him like high fives and hugs. Oh, yeah.
How dumb can you be as a defense attorney? Like, this is classic NFL. This is like hiring Norv Turner to be your head coach. This is exactly the same thing. Like, classic NFL. Like, what's your best defense? Let's blame it on these two guys. They don't got anything. Well, except for that video. Fuck. So, anyway.
I mean, what they said in the documentary was like, the evidence was so overwhelming. It was like one of the easiest cases they'd ever seen in that court. And they're like, basically like, no lawyer. It didn't matter how good they were. Like, I mean, they like, basically said that like, he was so dumb in the way he did this, like even by criminal standards.
It was like a 12-year-old committed this murder. Like, yeah. You could not have done it more dumb. They're like, let's see, Odin Lloyd got murdered in North Attleboro. Let's see if he knows anybody in the town of North Attleboro. Yep, just one, Aaron Hernandez. Okay, let's start there. Like, anyway.
Anyway, it's a good documentary. You know, they touch on a lot of subjects, and most of them are interesting, but ultimately irrelevant to what happened.
Like, just for instance, if you end up murdered in Scottsdale, then there's a chance
you two are prime suspects.
Might be suspects because we have a history. We live in Scottsdale. I'm just saying.
I don't think they're going to look at Christian Kirk first. He's the only other Scottsdale person.
Who could it be? It could be anyone in Scottsdale. Who could it be? Hates those Z last name people. Anyway, let's do the Hall of Fame because it's my favorite.
Right, yeah, let's end on a positive note. This is a fun thing that we invented last year, but it sure is fun to do. It's the Take the Points second annual Hall of Fame inductions. Dan's going to kick this off. Why don't you sort of explain what we did last year? Just give a brief overview and then we'll get into it.
Our Hall of Fame is all-encompassing. We have five categories. We each pick one winner each year. All candidates and objects and videotapes and films and everything are open from the beginning of time up to current date. This isn't a 2019 Hall of Fame. This is an all-time Hall of Fame. These can be funny, fictional, real, sad, inspiring. It doesn't matter. It's our show. It's our Hall of Fame. That's why for best coaches last year, we put in Steve Spurrier, Dabo Sweeney, and Lane Kiffin. That's all you need to know about the Hall of Fame. Let's do it. Are we ready to go?
Yeah, so I'm going to be the stenographer here. So you two go first on each category. I'll go last. I'm going to write these down as we go along. So okay. I will defer the first two choices to you guys. But yeah, I think it's important to reiterate, these are all-time awards. So it could go to guys from like 1995.
Thank you. I'm going to go in a little bit different order this year, change the order of the award show, the Hall of Fame inductions, to build a little suspense. We're going to start with commentators right off the bat, boys. Last year's inaugural class of greatest commentators went to Beano Cook, Vern Lundquist, and Doris Burke. For the class of 2020, I'll go first if you guys don't mind. I'll kick it off. Commentator going in this year is Brett Musburger. He's going in for many reasons. One, his voice is great. Two, He clearly gambled on every single game he called ever, which we now know for a fact because he quit his main job as sports announcer to be a full-time gambler in Vegas and run his own operation. Three, he was talking about AJ McCarron's girlfriend, so we can just wrap that into this nomination as well. So that was really funny on air. He was absolutely hilarious. He was so blatantly obvious about backdoor covers and overs and unders when the average fan had already turned the game off. He would call the game passionately late as a sports bettor. I bet if we went back now and watched a game from like 2004 and we knew the spread was 19.5 in the fourth quarter, he was like, another first down and the clock stops. Like, he was all fired up for a three score game for no reason.
Can I interject? He always used to do the thing where they'd score, you know, Northwestern would score a late touchdown against Ohio State to lose the game by 13 instead of 20. And he'd be like, that's a big score for some people.
Including himself. So thank you, Mr. Musburger. You are a role model to me.
Before you go, I don't know how Musburger with his gambling ties was not inducted last year, but going forward, I would like to say that we refer to him now as the godfather of Take the Points.
He pretty much is. And real quick, me and Ryan were watching some random college football show the other day on TV, and they were talking about the Rose Bowl, USC, Texas. And someone was talking about Musburger just like running around being like, that's a touchdown for Texas. Like, so apparently Musburger was on Texas plus the points against USC and running around. So very cool.
He knew.
He knew. He got all the inside. He knew VY was unstoppable. He had somebody call him from Texas. Like, I'm telling you, he cannot be stopped. Ryan, what you got? Commentator of the year 2020.
Okay. I'm going to take a little bit of an opposite tact on this. Instead of honoring a past legend who gave us much pleasure, I'm going to honor a new discovery of ours, who I look forward to giving me many, many exciting calls of Touchdown Rainbow Warriors. I'm putting in the Facebook Hawaii announcers that I get to watch on my phone every other Saturday. They're going into the Hall of Fame. I need to know their names. Oh, God.
You don't know their names, just for the record?
Googling.
Our researcher is on it right now.
Where is this fucking guy's name? He's so good. My announcer. Tom, fill me in here. Okay, so I will. So Hawaii football has been great. Nick Rolovich, very exciting year. Nice job by him getting paid and going to Washington State. Robert Kekula, K-E-K-A-U-L-A. Spell that.
Robert Kukala.
Robert Kukala. He's been the commentator from 92 on, basically. So there we go. We're going with him.
So, yeah, I'm putting the Hawaii announcer, but specifically the Facebook live broadcast of Hawaii games.
All right. I love that one. That's what the Take the Points Hall of Fame is all about. I, unfortunately, I'm going to wrap it up with a serious non-joke pick. I had two guys. I had three, including Musburger, but I made sure to have enough of these guys that no matter what you guys picked, I'd have at least one. So apologies to Kirk Herbstreit, who will, I'm sure, make it in a future year. But I'm going back to another legend who almost made it last year. The greatest Rose Bowl calls of all time pronounces the word Alabama better than any. Whoa, Nelly, Keith Jackson.
There you go.
For obvious reasons.
I figured you would get him in this year. That's why I went with my pick.
Yeah, it was him, Musburger, and Herbstreit would be my picks. But I love the Hawaii announcer one.
Coach Malafala Fumantu.
All right, what's up next?
Okay, moving on. Mascots and animals. Last year's inaugural class included Jonathan the Husky Dog from the University of Connecticut, Clemson's Rock out there in Death Valley, It puddles the duck of Oregon. Someone want to start this one while I brainstorm?
I was going to say, I only got one, so.
Go for it. You got it, Tom.
All right, so if you guys pick this, then I'm screwed. Mine is one that came on the scene. He's been around for a long time, but he especially came on the scene in the bowl game of last year. I think it was the Sugar Bowl, maybe. I can't remember.
Yes, it was.
With the most impressive mascot performance of all time. I'm talking about Bevo, the Texas Bull, chasing that little Georgia dog all over the field. Bevo, you're in.
That's a great pick, Tom. Yeah, that was very impressive. The 14.5 points were not necessary after he almost killed a dog in front of 100,000 people.
Oh, yeah. You texted me at the same time I was on sportsbook.antigua at the time, I think. Yeah. I was like, I saw that and I'm like, oh, I'm getting my bet in right now. More money on Texas. And then you guys like both texted me like, you see that shit? Put money on Texas now.
Money line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bevo.
Okay. Ryan.
All right. I like what Tom did last year with Puddles the Duck, basically going with the best commercial mascot who always had the coolest ESPN commercials. I'm going to go with the second coolest ESPN commercials. You can call me a homer if you want, but Otto the Orange, you are in the Hall of Fame because you are a ridiculous mascot. You may make no sense to Syracuse whatsoever. And you got punched by Charlie Steiner in a great ESPN commercial.
Did get punched.
So you are in the Hall of Fame. Good job by you, Otto.
Awesome. Great pick.
That's a great pick. He's been around over the years. Yeah, the whole Charlie Steiner one was pretty good. That made me feel good back in the day. Watching him get slugged out was pretty good. Okay, for this last one, I'm going to go a little bit weird, but I'm gonna talk about it. I'm going to put the Stanford tree in as the last one here. Now, I may have been watching Planet Earth Forests the other night and picked up some information on the Stanford tree. Did you know that the redwoods around Stanford are so old that they were on Earth well before like the Grand Canyon or like the Himalayas? Like that's how old those trees are. It's really crazy. And then they can grow 10 times faster than a similar tree in different areas around the world. Three of the five largest trees in the world are just outside of Stanford in that area of the country. That being said, it's a pretty cool mascot. He has a tree. It's very vertical. When he trips over, he falls. It looks kind of goofy. It's almost like a baseball mascot-looking thing. Stanford tree. I feel pretty good about this. Stanford tree going in second class 2020.
We're going green for the Hall of Fame this year.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, sustainable Hall of Fame.
Sustainable. So, yeah, Stanford tree, you're in.
I mean, I guess I picked a bull, so that's really not sustainable.
It is. It's animal energy. That's fine. Okay. We're going now to another fun one before we get down to the serious inductees. We're going to the memorabilia wing. Now, this is the true wild card of the Take the Points Hall of Fame. Last year's inductees included a videotape of the 2007 Fiesta Bowl between Boise State and Oklahoma with some legendary play calls, comebacks, proposals, the whole nine yards. There was also a ticket stub to the 2011 Fiesta Bowl between UConn and Oklahoma to prove that the University of Connecticut played in a major college bowl game. And the original U turnover chain also makes an appearance. It's hung in the Hall of Fame. It spawned a revolution. We even saw the turnover club this year with fake bottles of champagne. That might have been my personal highlight of the ripoffs of the U. So nice job on that one.
Oh, I have a favorite, the turnover pencil from Akron.
Yeah. Akron was like 0-19 and they only played 12 games. They're the worst team in the country, so that could be part of the reason why. Memorabilia wing. Someone got one that's really hot off their tongue that they can't wait to hold. Go right ahead.
I can take this if you want. I got a pretty simple one, but I think it's very important and deserves to be in there. Coach O's accent is what I'm inducting.
It's very good, Tom. Keep talking about it. You have to explain your pick. You can't
Well, Danny, Coach O's accent's the most important thing and we belong in the Hall of Fame. We're going to win this whole damn thing now. We beat Alabama. We went in the house. We said, fuck the Tide. Roll Tide. Fuck you. So my accent single-handedly carried Joe Burrow to the best season of all time. I did that.
Okay, Tom, I think that is very...
I started to lose it. I started to turn into like the villain from True Detective at the end there. But that's it. Most fun accent to do since Spurrier.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Tom, because my induction into the Memorabilia Hall of Fame is Steve Spurrier's visor.
Yes.
You're going in because you are the ultimate look. When you see a visor, you think Spurrier. I wore a visor for most of my coaching career because of Steve Spurrier, and it wasn't even the same damn sport. But I love Coach Spurrier. I love visors. You're going in.
Solid, solid choice.
Excellent choice. Spurrier is a class act. We said it last year when we inducted him, first class on the coaches, some of his great quotes, and, you know, can't spell citrus without UT, which is pretty good, and a lot of memorable quotes. All right, last one, memorabilia wing. Let's think here. Well, I like the sports bet. I like points. So what I'm putting in the memorabilia is a collection of tortillas that I found on the ground at the Texas Tech Raider Stadium over the past 15 years between the Cliff Kingsbury and the Graham Harrells and the Mike Leach years and the Air Raid and the 66 points in the stupid Vegas over-unders of 66.5 of them hosting Baylor with RG3. Texas Tech overs have been probably the most profitable thing in college football betting in the last 15 years. Therefore, I'm picking up the tortillas that they throw in the air after every touchdown up off the ground, dusting off the nachos and weed and putting them in the Hall of Fame.
That's a long one to write down. I've got tortillas from Texas Tech, Cliff Kingsbury over betting era. Does that sum it up?
We got tortillas in the Hall of Fame. Next to also, you also threw in a bag of Tostitos last year with the UConn ticket stub to prove that the Fiesta Bowls happened. So we now have a bag of Tostitos and tortillas in the Hall of Fame. We're really adding some nice memorabilia together here.
I mean, I think there's obviously some food and beverage. We could probably have our own food and beverage wing. Like,
that might happen.
Like Dr. Pepper is going to have to get in one of these years soon.
Our food is sponsored by Dr. Pepper. We're going to do our own Dr. Pepper commercials.
Sponsored by Dr. Pepper flavored Tostitos.
That's an idea for next year. We could do our own Dr. Pepper sitcom series, like five.
No, you know what we should do is we'll do the ripoff version sponsored by Dr. Rocket, the Dr. Pepper substitute you used to get at Camillus Mall for 25 cents.
That's a good idea. We'll do a whoop-hop one. We can do that. Okay, so moving on. Two categories left. Coaches. Last year, we put in Steve Spurrier with his national championships. We put in Dabo Sweeney with his national championships. And we put in Lane Kiffin with his other things. So that leads us to this year.
The national championship of life.
Lane Kiffin's so good. Okay, guys, what did Steve Spurrier accomplish in the last 12 months? Nothing. What did Dabo Sweeney accomplish in the last 12 months? Well, he had a good season, won his conference, but didn't win a national title. Lane won his conference, upgraded conferences, and was a social media beast. That's why Lane Kiffin, again, is in the Think the Points Hall of Fame. Because since last year, he's already onto a new school, this time in the SEC. He's changed the way we're going to watch TV on Thanksgiving night. Like, that's why he's in the Hall of Fame. Anyway, we can talk about Lane forever. Coaches. Who wants to put a coach in first?
One of you guys take this one.
I will. I'll put a coach in.
Okay.
I'm going to put a coach in who is still active, but not in college. But when he did coach in college, he was great. I always smiled when I watched him on the sidelines because he was always smiling and fist pumping and always chewing lots of gum and bringing guys like Will Ferrell and Snoop Dogg to practice. Mr. Pete Carroll, your NCAA violations have lapsed. You are now eligible for the Take the Points Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Pete Carroll, you get in this year for me.
Okay. Tom C, logging Pete Carroll.
I'm logging it. I've got a few guys, but you know, I don't have a, like, I didn't prepare much on this category. Cause as I said, I thought we would each do, you know, maybe two or three. So I didn't have a coach in mind. But I think I'm going to induct one of our favorites who, actually was the one guy who could, get rid of Pete Carroll in a championship game. The aforementioned Mack Brown, a coach we love here, going in for no other reason than we love him. And he, you know, won one of the most exciting, best national championships ever. Mack Brown.
Very nice selection, Tom. Mack Brown. UT, North Carolina, played Clemson the closest besides, well, LSU. They're up and coming. They got a nice quarterback coming next year for a sophomore campaign.
Yes, excellent, but make no mistake, this is for his work at Texas.
All right. Time for another winner, coach. Take the Points, Hall of Fame, coach Dan P. pick for this year. We're going to go a little bit off the rails. We're going to put Mike Leach in the Hall of Fame. Mike Leach, offensive mastermind, air raid architect alongside Hal Mumme, was a lawyer, never played football, thinks of the game really outside the box, changed the way offenses are run, really excited to see what he does at Mississippi State with SEC talent. The guy's a freak. To turn around Texas Tech was crazy. To turn around Washington State is even crazier. I mean, Washington State's on the border of Idaho. I don't know if people know that or not. Like, there's no reason that team should ever be good. They're so in the middle of nowhere, but he's such a mastermind on how to call football games. He's so smart. You know, he's a goofy guy, but I bet you if you did an IQ test of all head coaches, he might finish top three. So, Mike Leach, 20. Congratulations. I'm all over the Texas Tech Mike Leach thing this year. I'm very happy about this. So Mike Leach, nice job.
Both Egg Bowl coaches are in.
That's right. I'm moving to Mississippi. I'm telling you. That's it. I'm going to listen to local radio all day and work from home. Can't wait. That's all I want to do. College football talk. All right, guys, last category. You excited for this one? This is the big one. This is like the main event. Players. Last year, the players that went in were Tim Tebow from the University of Florida, Vince Young from the University of Texas. Who the hell was the third one? And the third one.
I'm looking it up. Oh, Tommy Frazier, my pick, of course. Tommy Frazier,
yes. You said from the greatest college football team of our lifetime, Nebraska, me and Ryan said, oh, Tom put an asterisk next to our list already. We're all pissed off. It's kind of funny when I listen back to that. You were like, yeah, sorry. Anyway, they're all in. What players would we like to add to the Hall of Fame this year?
Can I just say before you pick, like, this is the category as you look through it, like, this is really the, like, cream of the crop.
There's a lot of great people.
There's so many good ones, and you only get three. I mean, coaches, commentators, like, you can get to the joke ones pretty quick, but Is there room for a joke player here, or is it just going to be the greatest of all time?
There's always room for jokes. I mean, Curtis Enos has an opportunity to get selected here.
But I was going to say, listen, well, I'll tell you my potential ones when I get there, but there might be a Rashan Salaam on the list.
LJ.
Don't leave us hanging, Tom. Get right into it.
Go right ahead.
Start us off.
Well, you know, it's a tough one because you've got years and years, and we think about our whole lifetime, and there were so many great players before. You know, Kajana Carter, Rashan Salaam. These are the best players I could think of. But, you know, there have been others as well. But it occurred to me, you know, this isn't going to have the impact that given the previous choices, but it occurred to me that we should go way back and honor a player from a long, long time ago. You know, a lot of great players have won the Heisman. Joe Burrow won the Heisman, Mayfield, Kyler Murray, some of the best quarterbacks. But there was an even better quarterback who may be in the Hall of Fame already in a different area, maybe in the Hall of Fame in two different areas now, who also won his own Heisman Trophy in 1966. He has not made an appearance on our show yet this whole season, but I think he's come for one final guest appearance. Danny, it's me, the ball coach. I'm in as a coach. I'm in for the memorabilia wing. People forget I was a great player. I was one of the best. I won the Heisman in 66. I helped Danny Werfel win a Heisman. He played for the Rhine Fire. I was better than Peyton Manning because I could win the Citrus Bowl. Put me in the Hall of Fame.
You're going to induct Steve Spurrier as a player.
As a player. We're putting Steve Spurrier in, and I will not rest until Spurrier is in all categories. So stay tuned for next year, commentators.
This is your show, Tom, so I'm going to go ahead and approve that. So nice job. Wow.
Heisman winner. Danny.
It is tough. I was really torn. I'm torn really between two guys. I'm thinking that I'm going to go with the nostalgia pick here. So getting inducted this year for me as a player is really the first true memory I have of gambling on college football. And the player I loved the most back then, who won me money as an early, young, high school gambler, because his coach, who you put in the Hall of Fame, Tom, kept putting in the wrong quarterback to start the games. So this guy would have to come in off the bench and win these games every time. Major Applewhite, you are in the Hall of Fame for Take the Points. We salute you. I didn't want to like you. You were replacing a left-handed quarterback, and that bugs me because as a lefty, I don't like to root against lefties. But Chris Sims is also the son of Phil Sims, who beat the Bills in a Super Bowl. So I could basically hate him. He is the only lefty I've probably ever truly, really hated was Chris Sims. Major Applewhite, congratulations. The start of my over-under understandings was because of you. You're in.
Good picks, boys. You know what? I'm not going to mess around. It's not going to be a funny pick. I'm putting someone that deserves to be in there. Cam Newton is going in the Player Hall of Fame. Unstoppable rebel force, catching touchdowns, throwing touchdowns, running touchdowns, no head coach, no playbook. No talent around him, no one on his team good in the NFL, no draft picks, impossible schedule, 1 year, transferred in, deck stacked, 24-point deficit to Alabama on the road. Doesn't fucking matter. Cam Newton.
That's a good one to wrap it up with because, you know, many people talk about him as the best player of the decade that just ended.
He was.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what he did... It gets more and more impressive every year.
the more I watch the SEC as a college football fan and really watch it, I'm like, how the fuck did he do this shit against the SEC? Like, you can do this in the Pac-12 in a bubble. But, like, no way did this really happen. And he just did it. Like, and, like, his team was no good. Like, looking back on it, it's so funny. There was no coach. There were no good players. It was just him. It was literally just him.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Dyer was the second best player as a freshman. And then that one big defensive lineman who went to, what, the Lions and didn't really pan out?
Fairly.
Yeah, fairly.
No, that's really, no.
Heart condition, he's out of football.
Yeah. So anyway, Cam Newton, well-deserved. Congratulations. Him and VY, my two picks, well-deserved.
That's a great pick.
Well-deserved to lock those two down in early. Okay. So there you go. Hall of Fame wrapped up.
All right, Kajana Carter, get ready. You're going in next year for me.
Oh, yeah.
I need more time to prepare for that one, though. I need a month.
Next year, I can promise you that.
We really should do like six players because there's so many guys who can go in.
I was going to argue for a co Michael Bishop, Darren Sproles pick, actually. But. I thought it'd be questionable two people, so I'll just induct them slowly over the next 10 years.
By season 17 of Take the Points, we'll have a chance to get these guys in. The funny thing is by next year, by the third, you know, Take the Points Hall of Fame, we're going to have all the funny coaches that we like. We're going to have all the commentators. We're going to have all the mascots and animals. The memorabilia wing and the player wing is just never going to be enough.
Yeah. I think we're good on mascots and animals. I think we can shut that one down. Like, I can't really think anymore, really. Anyway, we can talk about
that. We can have a rotating category. Like, the food and beverage wing next year gets three. And then, like, maybe in 3 years we re-induct more mascots as a need arises.
We should have one on our favorite local food segment when a college football game's on TV, like... When Syracuse plays against Pitt Friday night from the Dome and they fire that dinosaur barbecue fucking thing out with 7 minutes to go in the first quarter, you know it's coming. Or like they're here in Arizona, they're like, hey, we're here in Mill Ave. They have the same camera shot. I swear ESPN mounted a camera up on the side of a building in Arizona State, and that's the same live shot cam the last 10 years I've seen it.
The more I think about this, the more I like the food and beverage wing because it can just be any most popular food from any teams. I mean, you can have the creamery in there for Penn State. You can have dinosaur barbecue in there for Syracuse. You could have, you know,
wings
whatever.
For Georgia. It's going to be great. We're going to do ATL wings for the Bulldogs if they ever get their act together, but they never will.
Little Texas barbecue. So good. All right. Go ahead, Dan.
No, I was just trying to seg us. Is it time for bold predictions and to say goodbye?
Yeah, this is it. I mean, you know, the next few minutes will be the last few minutes of 2019-2020 season. And what I want from each of you is, you know, parting words, reflection on the season, whatever you want to say as your send-off, and then a bold prediction for 2020-2021 season. So whoever wants to take it.
Okay. Bold prediction for next season. Dun, 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 dun. Next season is Nick Saban's last season at Alabama.
Yeah, that's a bold one.
Thank you.
Whoa. Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's very bold. I was not expecting that one.
That's pretty bold.
You know, that's what I'm here for. I'm here for a mic drop to end the season.
See, I was going to have a bold Alabama prediction, but it's going to pale in comparison to that one.
They can both happen, Tom.
All right. So, I mean, I'll just share mine and then we could go around and do some closing thoughts. My bold prediction is that I'll give you two. My bold prediction is Mac Jones will not be the starting quarterback for Alabama next year. Taulia Tagovailoa will start a game or two, but they have a freshman coming in who's supposed to be like otherworldly, and I think he's going to be the starter for Alabama sometime very quickly. I forget his name, but Alabama is going to have a new quarterback who's not on the roster currently.
Okay.
I said two. Ohio State's going to be the national champion 2021. I don't like it any more than you guys do.
I don't know. You seem to talk about it a lot, Tom.
Well,
we're going to have an intervention here to end the podcast. I've held my tongue the whole season. I can't do it any longer.
They finished third.
They're your goddamn favorite team.
Just no, this is false. Very false.
You fucking love Ohio State. Every week you're like, the longest segment for you is always Ohio State. You pick Fields to win the Heisman like three different times.
He almost did. He came in second.
You're a closet Buckeye fan.
Oh,
First off, I have sat here all year while Dan talked about Pitt and my love of Pitt. And I've turned the other cheek, but this is a bridge too far. At least, you know, we may have our disagreements with the Pitt Panthers, but at least it's still in the Pennsylvania family. When you talk about that four letter school from the West, this is some bullshit. And
this is the confirmation I needed out of you, Tom. This is what I want to hear. This is good.
I need to see the passion.
Listen,
Tom.
I'm going to yell at you in Pennsylvania voice. Yous don't come into our garden. Insult the Wawa. And
yep. Yins Jagoffs, you hillbillies from Ohio.
Yins Jagoffs. It's pretty good. Dan, you got the Western Pennsylvania one down more than me.
No one likes those hillbillies from Ohio.
Yous.
It's not Ohio. It's Ohio, first of all.
Yous don't belong in our garden, so see yous.
Go back to Ohio. So, Tom, that's the passion I want to see out of you all of 2020. I want to see you picking against them.
You've awoken a sleeping giant.
I'm over here taking Cincinnati as the lock of the week in 15 at Columbus like an asshole. At least I'm going down with some pride. You need to sacrifice and get back on board the hatred train. No betting on them ever. Not allowed.
All right, then. My new prediction is Penn State, already pretty good with a horrible offensive coordinator, will be unstoppable with Kurt Ciccarelli, whose name I will learn to pronounce by next season, the Minnesota offensive coordinator. Great move, by the way, from Penn State. They're like, who should we hire for our new OC? How about the guy that beat us?
Yeah, that torched us badly. And yeah, they got rid of your boy, Ricky Rodney. He's gone.
To me, that's like one of the best hiring strategies you can do. It's like,
and they kept Franklin.
Who beat our ass this year at that very thing. Oh, this guy, not only do we get him to do that for us, but now he's not on Minnesota doing it against us. So it's like a double win.
There you go. Excellent, Tom. Way to channel.
Yeah. So like I said, my prediction, Penn State beats Ohio State. James Franklin finally gets over the hump.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan, what do you got for your bold prediction? Tell me, I heard you secretly love BYU.
Oh, well, I talk so highly of them all season on Take the Points.
John Smith's listening. Be careful.
Apparently, I'm banned from talking about BYU for next season, apparently.
Yes.
So here's my bold prediction. I got two of them. One is, only one of the four playoff teams will make it back to the playoff next year. There will be three new playoff teams next season.
I like that.
Okay. That's kind of bold. I wanted to go four, but I can't go all four.
No, that's very bold.
I think there's two that probably make sense. I think saying three is pretty bold. There's a couple of them, namely Clemson and Ohio State, who I think have the inside track. But as we just heard, Ohio State's out. So really, Clemson's the only one with a chance.
Correct.
Yeah, fuck Ohio State.
And here's my other bold prediction. Cole McDonald's going to start an NFL game this season. Let's go, Cole.
Yeah, I like that one.
I like
it. Sorry for the Chargers. Love it.
Over Tom Brady?
Oh, yeah. Well, with Tom Brady actually finally gets hurt when he has to move, or get out of New England.
When Jared Goff turns out to be an actual frog like we know he is, Cole McDonald's going to get a spot start and never relinquish it. The new face of Los Angeles football is going to have dreads, and he's going to be white. That's going to throw some people off.
So good. Which team in the NFL, which city most deserves a white quarterback with dreads? Like, where would he fit best?
Seattle.
He should take over for Matt Ryan in Atlanta. It'd be way better. He'll throw a deep to Julio every fucking play. Ridley would get like 1,700 yards. He'd be so good there. Matt Ryan fucking sucks. Boston College sucks too. They're even worse.
They're your Ohio State. I think you secretly love them.
There's no reason for me to talk about Boston College, but I found a way to bring up my hatred for them somehow and season it. Like, no news on them whatsoever, but I like to reiterate that they are the fucking worst. BC, Ohio State, who else is on our shitbag list? Oklahoma?
Yes.
They're a bunch of bitches.
Well, I don't want Oklahoma. I want them on a 3-year playoff ban at least. 10-year? Let's say 10-year.
Well, it's just the worst. Yeah.
It's Notre Dame.
Yeah, Notre Dame. That's basically your core four hatred right there. Everyone doesn't hate anyone else. Like, UCLA doesn't piss me off because they're not any good any year. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Alabama used to piss me off back in the day, but then I've just learned to accept it and embrace it. It's been a ride with Alabama over the years. You know, it was like, all right, I don't like this team. They're too good. Then it was like, all right, I submit. And now I've learned to actually love the process.
I got another one, Iowa. They're coming up my list of teams I don't like. I don't think I've ever made money on an Iowa game my whole life. I'm 0 for like 68.
That's for me. That's Michigan State. I have nothing against D'Antonio like you guys do, but they're the team I can never bet. So yeah, the core four of hatred: Ohio State, Boston College, who else?
Oklahoma, Notre Dame.
Oklahoma, Notre Dame. I think that's a pretty good list. Should we just end like that?
I think we should.
That's good.
I think that's it. I think we're done.
All right. Thank you to everyone who has listened to Take the Points this year. We appreciate it. I think we've done more shows this year than ever. We only took like 1 week off, and we did some extra ones. Usually this is where I say we'll be back with one off season one, but probably not.
Oh, yes, we will. Dan and I are going to do a special one because we're going to watch the Lawrence Phillips documentary on Showtime.
Oh, my God.
It's 88 minutes long, and we're going to pour over every minute of it. I can't wait.
So, God damn it. Lawrence Phillips has a documentary. We all know of my love for the Brooks Bollinger story on the Big Ten Network, a Big Ten Network exclusive documentary. How the fuck does Tommy Frazier not have a documentary? How did Lawrence Phillips and Brooks Bollinger get documentaries and Tommy Frazier didn't? I am making I'm going to make it my life mission to get Tommy Frazier on this podcast. And then it's over. Like, he's going to appear, third week of August, 2020. And then we're going to be like, anyway, I think Clemson's going to win the championship this year.
We're done
here. We're done.
Did they not do like a 30 for 30 Nebraska football?
Nobody even talks about that team.
Like, they should have done a 30 for 30 about Nebraska. They were more dominant than the U was. The U just had ridiculous stuff going on. But stuff. Nebraska was better.
Stuff.
And quotes. They should have a documentary.
Of course. We talk about, they went to 3 national championships in a row. They lost the first one. They won the second one with a backup QB. Then they absolutely had the most biggest destruction I've ever seen and still remains the biggest destruction in a championship game of Florida. A good Danny Werfel Florida team that went on to win the national championship the following year. And that's what we talk about. But then you forget there was the 97 Nebraska team that was like a co-champion with Michigan. And then there was, Eric Crouch and who's the other guy? Frost. Yeah. That guy, the coach. Yeah. So there was Frost and then he was first. And then there was Eric Crouch. So it's like really the Nebraska dynasty was like 8 years long. I mean, it was on par with this Alabama one.
Well,
Nebraska will win the championship next year. That's my bold prediction, folks.
Oh, wow. That's wrong.
No, my bold prediction is I will once again bet the Nebraska team total under games. They're going to put it at like 8.5 or 9, and it's going to go under again.
Last point for all of our listeners. We will have one podcast. We got to do one sometime in August with our futures bets. That we need to do a futures bets episode. This year we had FAU to win the conference, a +450 that came in. UConn under 2.5 wins came in. We'll be going through these next year, spreading some money out, and then looking back and see how we did.
Yeah. I had the Michigan and Nebraska under win totals, which both came in nicely. Michigan's was like 9.5 or 10. I mean, I texted you guys when that came out in like July. I mean, I think we still have the documentation, and I was like, this is a lock. Like, no, they play Wisconsin at Penn State. I even like called the games they were going to lose.
There you go.
So anyway, we know what we're doing, and we still thank you all for listening, even though you benefit greatly from our wisdom.
Watch the X-Files.
Yeah, watch the X-Files, watch the Tommy Frazier documentary that we're going to make and release next year. And that's it. Enjoy the off-season. See you next year. Take the point.